Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, at least two of us who marry today will have to at some point negotiate through a divorce, and attorney Angie Hellier's firm ranked number 31 in family law, and she's written a new book to say there is a wiser way to handle divorce. It does not have to be an adversarial process, and she's going to share some positive strategies for your next best life in the last half of today's show. And at some point today, you're going to have to influence or persuade someone, whether it's asking a colleague a favor, negotiating with a contractor, or asking your spouse to help clean up, pick up those socks, dear. Well, in the small, big, three power players in the world of persuasion, science, and practice partnered to describe how, in today's information-overloaded world, it's the smallest changes that lead to the biggest difference in results. And it's really quite fascinating. Let me tell you a little about each of the authors. We have Steve Martin, who is the Director of Influence at Work. He's in the United Kingdom. Joining us today, we have Noah J. Goldstein. He's a professor at the UCLA Anderson School of Management and has won awards for both teaching and research. And we have Robert Cialdini, who's the Regents Professor Emeritus of Psychology and Marketing at Arizona State University. And as you can imagine, these are super qualified, very well researched, spent many, many years doing this work. And they've written this incredible book called The Small Big, Small Changes That Spark Big Influence. And again, we have Bob Cialdini with us today and Noah Goldstein. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Thanks. And one of you's in Phoenix today, the other's in, I forget where you said, California?
Santa Monica, California.
Yeah, okay. So I want to just kick off a little because, as I mentioned, your other partner in crime on this particular topic, this book, is in London. So how did you guys all connect? How did you come together and start working together?
Well, you know, Vicki, we all talk to audiences about the power of persuasion and which principles of psychology most incline people to say yes to us. What could we put into a message, a request, or a proposal that would be most successful in getting people to lend their assent? Well, we have developed six universal principles of influence. For example, authority, that people want to say yes to those individuals who are experts. Scarcity, that people want to seize those opportunities that are rare or dwindling in availability. And when we talk about those principles and say, well, here's the principle of scarcity or here's the principle of authority, if we ever say, we all notice this, if we ever said to the audience, now, here's something really small that I'm going to give you that will allow you to commission the power of this fundamental human tendency, right? Vicki?
Right.
The room would go silent. Bodies would incline toward the stage. Faces would lift to us, and pens would poise over the notepads in front of people. And we all recognized that this was some kind of moment, suddenly, where we had touched a nerve. People need shortcuts in today's busy, dense, information-overloaded world, where they can commission these powerful principles that we were talking about to them, but by triggering them with the smallest little change they could make to their persuasive approach that would lend itself to big outside success.
Right. So the whole book, the premise of this book, so that listeners understand, is that small is big. You know, we have this hunger for bite-sized pieces of information, if you will, that are powerful. And focusing on the smallest change we can make to make the biggest difference to results. And you've taken this and put in 52 small chapters, if you will. Tell us a little bit about how you structured the book and why you structured it this way.
Well, let me jump in again, because indeed, we structured it for exactly the reason I was suggesting. People don't have a lot of time, right? So we wanted to give them bite-sized chapters about bite-sized pieces of information or strategies that they could employ to be more successful. That was one thing. We wanted to walk our talk. The other is that there were 52 because we thought people could try out one a week for a year and see how actionable these principles, these pieces of strategy were. It's not just that they inform us and educate us, although we love to think that that's the case, but they also become implementable if they are small pieces of information. So we wanted people to try one out, one a week for a year, and by the end of that 52-week period, they would have, we hope, dozens of strategies that had worked well for them that they could then carry on to all subsequent years.
Yeah. And all of these...
And of course, that pacing is just a suggestion. We have plenty of readers who will go through the book in a day and say that they were able to change three or four things that worked the very next day.
So, well, I'm one of those.
Above all, we wrote this book to be actionable.
Yes, I'm one of those. When I was reading the book, I scribbled down several things that I thought, I can start doing that right away.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I'd like to take a look at some of those things just so we can share them with listeners. Now, I want to just stress here that all of these points, if you will, were researched, some by you, some by other scientists, but you've just really broken this all down into the simplest form. So let's go back to what I said at the beginning. If you have a family member and you'd like more help from them, you know, you're asking people to do a task at work for you, you need a favor from them. What are some of the tips we can, the strategies we can start applying today to make a difference in that?
Well, you know, here's the simplest one. Before we ever ask, we should give something, and it could be something very small, a piece of information or a compliment or something that is perceived as a gift that we have given to someone else, because there's a rule in our society that says people have to give back to those who have first given to them. Let me give you a little study that shows how this works. I don't know how many of your listeners have ever been a server, a waiter, or a waitress in a restaurant. It's surprising when we speak in public groups and I ask people to raise their hands, often it's a quarter to a third of the audience has been a server at some point. And everybody knows how important tips are to a server. And there's a small thing that a waiter or waitress can do at the end of the meal to significantly increase the likelihood of a better tip. If, when they bring the bill on a tray, they have put a mint on the tray for each diner, the tip goes up 3.3%.
Isn't that interesting?
For the price of a mint. Now, here's what I like about this study. If they then do something unexpected, give as a gift something unexpected, two mints on the tray for each diner, the tip goes up 14.1%. So one small thing we can think about if we're trying to move somebody at work in our direction or our kids is to be a benefactor first and then make our request. People are just so much more willing to say yes after we've gone first.
Interesting. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you some more questions around this. One of the things I want to talk about is how we apply this to motivate others and ourselves. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guests are Bob Cialdini and Noah Goldstein. And they wrote the small changes that spark big influence. And this is all based on science. This is a really interesting book. It can make a big, big difference, I think, in day-to-day life. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Make some big jumps, you were afraid to break some bones. Come on, make some big jumps, life is your saloon. You hold your head up high like you think I do.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Conscious living for conscious people. Alternative Talk 1150.
Make some big jumps, you afraid to break some bones. Come on, make some big jumps, life is your saloon. You hold your head up.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We are talking today about the book, The Small Big, Small Changes That Spark Big Influence. And this was written by three heavyweights in the field of psychology, behavior, and science. And Steve Martin, Noah Goldstein, and Robert Cialdini. We have Noah and Bob with us, Robert with us. And I want to ask you, Bob, how do we apply this principle to motivate ourselves? And that is, you know, what's the smallest change we have to make in our approach to get the biggest difference in results? How do we use this to motivate ourselves? Others.
Oh, how to motivate others. Okay, that's one that I think is of interest to most of us, because we're all more successful when we are able to persuade others to move in our direction. Here's one that I think we often forget, and that is one of the major principles of influence is that people want to follow the lead of the crowd, of what most others around them, like them, are doing. So one study showed that, so if we just point to what others, what the majority of others are doing or have been doing that fits with our recommendation, will be much more successful. There was a study done in Beijing, China, for example, that showed that if a restaurant manager simply listed on the menu, these are our most popular dishes, each one immediately became 13% to 20% more popular. So something that's as honest as that, that's as costless as that, that's entirely ethical as that, produced an effect that didn't require any kind of real change in the quality of the food or the decor. No new chef had to be hired. No, just point to something that engages the power of the crowd, and people were willing to follow.
Interesting. And so then, Noah, how do we use this to motivate ourselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. The thing is, when we want to motivate ourselves, one of the things that we often do is generate goals, you know, so that we can get ourselves to lose weight or to work harder or to spend more time with family or whatever it is. And let's just take weight loss as an example. Typically, when people are setting goals, they, you know, generate a number, and they might say, for example, I would like to lose 2 pounds, per week. But there's some fascinating new research that shows that that might not be as motivational as expected. In fact, what this research shows is that instead of picking one number, such as 2 pounds a week, what works even more powerfully is to say, well, what about somewhere between 1 and 3 pounds per week? So what that does is there's kind of two components here. You want, on the one hand, a challenge, which would be 3, but you also want something that's achievable, which would be 1. And so having these types of goals where you say, okay, I'm going to lose between 1 and 3 pounds, or if you're trying to help your kid come up with goals for their studies, instead of saying, okay, well, why don't you try to get a 90 on this exam, if instead you say, well, why don't you try to get somewhere between 87 and 92, that tends to be more motivational than picking that that one number.
Interesting. Well, why is it that it's more motivational? I mean, what's the psychology behind this?
Well, I think it's, again, the combination of these two factors that I would say even more than the second one, I think the major one is that it seems more achievable. So it does lower the bar in a way, and you may be concerned about that. Well, if I say 1 to 3 pounds, maybe that means I'm going to just lose that 1 pound.
Mm-hmm.
But lowering that bar a little bit makes it seem more achievable, and then also having the higher number, once you feel like you've lost that 1 pound, makes it seem more of a challenge. And I think it's the combination of those two things.
Okay, great. And we only have a couple of minutes left here, but I wanted to just touch very quickly on negotiation, because it's a critical factor in everyday life, whether we're trying to get somebody to buy or sell. And you say in the book that we are more likely to get closer to the number we want if our initial offer or asking price is a precise number, like $4,987, versus a rounded off number like $5,000. Just talk to us briefly about that, if you would.
Sure, I'll be glad to jump in for this one. But let's say we want to sell an automobile, and we've done our research, and the right price for it is $7,024, if you look at all the models and everything that you've got on yours. Well, we typically round that down to 7,000, right? That's what we advertise for. It's a mistake, because if you say 7,024, the other bargainer recognizes that you've done your homework. You've made a precise number that fits with the exact value that you've researched for the car, and they're much more willing to accept it as a result.
Good tips. And that works whether we're buying or whether we're selling, right?
Exactly. Whatever offer you make, make it a precise one so people recognize that you're knowledgeable and have done your homework on the topic.
Yeah. Well, I thank you both for joining us today. The book is such an easy read, and I love the way you just laid it out in those chunk of, you know, bites of information that we can actually read in a couple of minutes and have an actionable result, an action to take away with us there. Noah Goldstein and Robert Cialdini have been my guests today. Thank you both very much for being with us. Appreciate it. Love your work.
Thank you for having us, Vicky.
My pleasure.
Well, we enjoyed the interview, I have to say.
My pleasure. And the book, again, is called The Small Big, Small Changes That Spark Big Influence. And I think anyone in business needs to read this, and anyone who's got a life needs to read this, quite honestly. Adam Grant, one of my all-time favorite guests that we had on the show, professor of Wharton School and the best-selling author of Give and Take, said, if you've ever struggled to change the beliefs or behaviors of other people, there's hope, and this book offers it. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference. between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com. If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Are you suffering from SCS or slow computer syndrome? Well, tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 for Tech Talk with Craig. I'm Craig Walker, lead technician and owner of Coho Computer. We'll take your calls, answer your questions, keep you up to date with the latest in high-tech news, and feature special guests. Tech Talk with Craig, Saturdays noon to 1, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. I love my
computer. Hi, I'm Charlie. I fight fires and I save lives.
My name's Renee. I'm a cardiologist. I save lives.
My name's Anthony. I'm an EMT. I save lives.
You don't have to be a professional to save a life. Firefighters, doctors, and others save lives. You can too. Don't wait. To learn more about the warning signs and how you can help prevent suicide, visit save.org. In a crisis, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
The new mainstream of talk radio, Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we have a few minutes here before my next guest joins us. She's Angie Hallier. She's written a book called The Wiser Divorce, and she's got some great strategies in there for getting through a divorce and planning for your next life. But I wanted to take just a few minutes here while we have the opportunity to answer one of the most common questions I get from listeners and from people in general is, how do you combat writer's block? And it doesn't matter if you're an artist or you're a designer, whether you make clothes, whether you are a business owner, whether you just do this for fun. I think the principles for me are pretty much the same. So I thought I'd run through my top five tips here. I was asking you before if you ever run into Eric Ryder, our producer here, if you ever run into writer's block with your music.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes I do run into writer's block with the music. The luxury of being kind of an unknown artist without a record label or anything like that is I don't have the deadlines.
That should put you under more pressure.
It should, but it doesn't necessarily do so. I don't have a deadline to get something done, like, you know, tomorrow or next right. week or whatever. So I can just let things go until they naturally evolve into the finished product that I want. And right. I also have the luxury of having, like, you know, 300 songs already written that, you know, we can certainly play in the meantime. So
wow, I didn't yeah. realize you've got 300 songs already written. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you make hay when the sun shines,
that's
I guess.
Right. So I want to run through just my five top tips here. We'll see if Eric has anything to add afterwards. So, you know, and I don't think it matters. I think the deadline, actually, Eric, is critical. So I think whether you're writing you know, on a deadline or you just created your own deadline, it's important at some point to be accountable to someone. If it's a friend you've promised is going to read your material, or whether it's your editor or your agent or a client. I think having that little deadline in place, little deadline, I have massive deadlines, but I think having that deadline in place is critical, because there's something that goes on in your subconscious and your mind starts brewing the ideas. So here are my top tips. Assuming you already have the deadline in place, right? Number one, I think the right environment is really important. I know that Irma Bombeck was famed because she used to get in her station wagon and drive around the corner and write in her station wagon away from her children. But not everybody can do that kind of thing. So it's important to find an environment that works for you. And surprisingly enough, you know, I've worked in writers' studios with media companies, and there's silence in there. That's not always the best environment to be in when you're creating. For me, I would say if I'm not traveling on assignment, then probably 3 of 5 days a week, I'm in a coffee shop, at least for a full morning working. And a new study came out to support that. They said there's a reason why creative folks often huddle together over their laptops in coffee shops. And that is because there's something to do with walking out of one's comfort zone and getting into a relatively noisy environment, they say, may trigger the brain to think abstractly and thus generate creative ideas. So that's one thing. I know sometimes I've been asked, how can you write in a coffee shop? But I'm in such I get in such a zone, I don't even hear it after a while, unless somebody super noisy walks in and disrupts. But
or spills their coffee on you.
So noise is not always bad, you know, and okay. I know other people who will put really loud music on to get themselves in the mood to start creating. So
interesting.
Yeah. Number two is, I think, to establish guidelines. And that goes back to the deadline situation, but not just the deadline. You know, we all know that Dr. Seuss wrote Green Eggs and Ham after somebody dared him to write an entire book in less than 50 words. And that's how that book came about. And there's a thing called Parkinson's Law. There's a law called Parkinson's Law. Have you heard of that, Eric?
I have not, but it's nothing to do with the disease.
No. It was actually a British, I think he was a scientist, I forget now, but he'd worked with the British bureaucracy a lot back way, way, many, many years ago. And I think it was in 1955 this became called Parkinson's Law. He said, work expands to fill the time available for its completion. So there's often a pressure factor when you give yourself a tighter deadline. You know, and I've used this. I do this all the time. I set deadlines for other people on my team, with my crew, wherever I'm working. When I used to work in the bank, I'd set deadlines. And I'd always, you know, sometimes you can say, oh, well, I'll give them an extra 2 weeks. If you give that extra 2 weeks, you can guarantee they're going to take that extra 2 weeks. But is the quality of work going to be any better? Probably not. And try it with some people, you know. It's really, try it with yourself, of course. It's really interesting.
I'd say that means that I push back 2 weeks to what I actually started working on it.
Yeah, it's like when we know we've got, you know, a science paper to write for school.
We'll Why do to today what you can put off till tomorrow, that sort of thing.
But other ways you can establish guidelines would be to maybe do what Dr. Seuss did and say, you know, hey, I'm going to write this piece in less than 250 words. And this applies across the board, whether you're writing fiction, nonfiction. You could be writing a press release, a business sales letter. But just say to yourself, I'm only going to do it in 200 words or 50 words. And the very process of trying to narrow that down to that number of words can help you narrow down your focus on what's really newsworthy, what's really exciting content, what is really important to that subject. Number three, ask somebody who knows nothing about the topic you're writing on to ask you questions. And what's the benefit in that? What do you think the benefit in that is?
Well, it would probably give you an outsider's view of the topic and maybe give you some ideas of what you should address if you want people that aren't already informed on the topic that you're writing about to learn stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it just helps spark that creativity in you? Because oftentimes we write about a subject we know or we've well researched, and then you have to think, well, you know, am I writing at too high a level? Am I not explaining, you know, the most important factor because I know it well?
Right.
So there's a lot of benefit to that. And just writing down their questions can help give you an outline to what you're trying to speak to and can help spark that creativity. Number four for me is getting outdoors and getting in nature and moving. In fact, this is probably at the top of my list. I've used this technique with many groups and individuals as well when I've been coaching. You know, I'll give you an example. Years ago, I worked in a media agency. We had a client come in. It was an international bank. They wanted us to do a special commercial for a new project they were launching. And we'd got 24 hours to come up with a concept. And guess who had to come up with the concept? Moi. So the director, the TV director, just looked at me and said, get lost. In other words, you know, go home, do whatever you need to do, but come back in the morning with an idea, with a concept. And so I did. I went to Merrymore Park. I rode my bike. I treated myself to dinner. I went home, took a shower, got myself comfy. And then about 10 o'clock at night, subconsciously, ideas had started coming to me while I was out playing.
Were you getting a little bit panicky and a little bit sweaty as like 9 o'clock rolled on and you hadn't come to that idea yet? Or
no.
Did you just have faith that it would be there in time?
I knew it would because I've been doing this a long time. And so that it's, for me, it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. But I've been, I guess, in the beginning, I used to be in that panic situation. And then the last one, I think, and this is just obvious, open your laptop and just write. You know, writer, if you were writing professionally, you don't have the indulgence of having writer's block. And, you know, to get motivated, you have to take action. To get inspired, you have to be living life. So you've just got to open that laptop and write. In fact, I just tweeted on this. I'll read it to you. It said, this was a quote from someone, if you're waiting for inspiration to write, you're not a writer, you're a waiter. I think that sums that up. But the bottom line is just shake things up and do things a little differently. And hopefully that sparks inspiration.
Well, that's the old saying, isn't it? That inspiration is 90% perspiration.
Perspiration. Yeah, it feels like. I love Ernest Hemingway's quote. He said, there's absolutely nothing to writing. You just sit at a typewriter and slit open a vein.
Let it bleed.
Words to that effect. All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll, I think we are at the right time to get our guests right now. So we will be back with you shortly. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay tuned.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in. providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, September 21st, it's Vet Sunday with Dr. Bill Burlingame. We'll have open phone lines throughout the show so you can ask any animal medical care and healing questions. Dr. Bill's an expert on immune support for animals and humans, one of the most knowledgeable vets about the Pleckner endocrine immune imbalance and laser therapy. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, I'm Charlie. I fight fires and I save lives.
My name's Renee. I'm a cardiologist. I save lives.
My name's Anthony. I'm an EMT. I save lives.
You don't have to be a professional to save a life. Firefighters, doctors, and others save lives. You can too. Don't wait. To learn more about the warning signs and how you can help prevent suicide, visit save.org. In a crisis, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Radio for your body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we are talking now about a subject which many people, an experience which many people have gone through and some go through many, many, many times, heaven forbid, but that is divorce. When we're talking about the wiser divorce, it does not have to be adversarial, says my guest, Angie Hallier. And she's written a great book called The Wiser Divorce, Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life. She's the founder and managing partner of Hallier and Lawrence PLC. It's ranked the number one family law firm in Arizona by Ranking Arizona. Her practice includes complex divorce and legal separation and business issues incident to divorce, spousal maintenance, etc., etc. And she's received actually many awards, the Top 10 Attorney Award, the Super Lawyer Award every year since 2007, and the list goes on. Angie Hallier, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Vicki. Nice to be here today.
Very glad to have you. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with Gemma Allen about the perils of social media in relationships and prenuptials and postnuptials et cetera. And this is a great, I think, a great book to go along with that because you focus on positive strategies for your next best life. So why did you want to write this book?
Well, you know, after almost 25 years of handling divorces, all kinds of divorces, you know, I really truly believe that what happens after your divorce can be the best part of your life. And I also understand that there's a direct correlation between how great that next best life is with how you acted and how you spoke and how you behaved while you went through your divorce. So I wanted to share those strategies I've learned with everyone.
Mm. Well, let's begin with the most common mistake that you see people making when they're going through a divorce. You know, and I know people make many mistakes. We all make them. But what would you say is the number one most common mistake?
Well, you know, a lot of the strategies I talk about employ trying to set aside those awful emotions that many times come along with divorce from the business of your divorce. You know, ending a marriage is really, from a legal perspective, just ending a contract that you entered into. And you can do that wisely, or you can do it as a battle, and you can do it as an emotional, you know, coming from an emotional abyss. So I really talk about in the book how you look at divorce as the business of divorce and not waste your money foolishly.
Right. And while we're talking about money, I've heard this from so many people and it just shocks me. But the minute they think they're going to go through a divorce, whether it's of their own choice or another, they start hiding the cash. And you say in the book, don't do that.
Oh, you know what? You would be amazed what people do thinking they're being smart about their divorce that come back to haunt them. You know, the truth really does usually come out. And if you have the right attorney, they can take whatever facts you have, be them good, be them bad, and help you get to the end of your divorce in a confident, great way. But if you hide those facts from people, they will come back to haunt you, and it will hurt you in the end.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've been through a divorce. I did not get a divorce attorney. I just didn't want to, I didn't want to play games, and I just thought we can work this out between the two of us. But it's very rare that that can happen. And so if we do have to get an attorney, we choose to get an attorney, give us some, you've got some tips in here. I love that you, all through the book, you have the top 10 tips advice, and you have the top 10 tips for finding a good attorney. Give us a couple of tips off there, if you would.
Yeah, one of the things that's really important is that you find the right attorney for you, not the attorney that was right for your friend or your mm-hmm. neighbor. Every divorce attorney has distinct personality, distinct ways of interaction. You have to find someone that you feel really has your back. And then, you know, I think one of the most important things is to find an attorney. It's how I talk about finding a good doctor. You don't go to a physician and they just say, well, you have this condition, take the medicine, come back in 2 weeks. I mean, a good doctor will say, here's what your diagnosis is. Here is the 5 ways we can treat that. Here's how much each of those ways will cost. And I need you to be an active participant in your treatment with me. And let's do this together. That's what you should find in a good divorce attorney.
Right. And so it's quite an intimate relationship. And your attorney gets to know a lot about you that you maybe wouldn't share with just everyone.
Right, right.
And give me a heads up on, you have a list of attorney pet peeves. So what shouldn't a client do?
Well, the number one pet peeve would be listen to what your attorney says and don't take unilateral action. You know, people hire their divorce attorney for that divorce attorney's expertise and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we know as divorce attorneys what's going to happen at the end of the road because we've been through hundreds, if not thousands, of divorces. And people in their divorce act in the minute, and they're not understanding how this will impact them in the long term. So listen to your attorney, listen to your attorney, listen to your attorney. That's probably the number one thing that makes attorneys go crazy.
Yeah, and I'm guessing the reason they don't listen is because they don't like the answer or they don't like what you're telling them they have to do.
Well, and many times it is counterintuitive to the emotions they're feeling.
Yeah.
You know, when we're really helping you, think about how you speak, think about how you act, have the right attitude. It's because it is a strategy. It is a way to get you to the end in a less expensive manner, in a more wholesome manner. And we know what's reasonable for you to achieve and not. So, you know, listen to us. You've hired us, and we'll get you there.
Okay. All right. We need to take a quick break. Tons of questions for you when we come back. I'm talking with Angie Hallier. She's an attorney who specializes in family law, divorce. And her book is called The Wiser Divorce, Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life. Please stay tuned.
I can't afford to compromise with someone I don't recognize. I'm splitting up.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7000. 7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Alternative Talk 1150 is on the interwebs. Dial us up at 1150kknw.com.
My head is separating from my heart. I'm splitting up.
And welcome back, everyone. I'm laughing at Eric's music there. I don't know where you find this, Eric. Angie Hallier is my guest. She's the founder and managing partner of Hallier and Lawrence PLC, ranked the number one family law firm in Arizona. And I wanted to talk in this segment, Angie, about going to court, because you say it's rarely the best option, and yet that's where most people seem to head.
Right. You know, I think we all have this idea of the court and the judges, especially if you're not a practicing attorney, as being the supreme commander of justice. I mean, they will dish out right and wrong. But the truth is, when you think about it, you know, judges have really hard jobs, especially divorce attorneys. I mean, if you think your own divorce is messy, think about listening to other people's divorces all day long, day in, day out, and being asked to make decisions, personal decisions about these people's destiny. And that's the life of a divorce judge. And, you know, judges are human. They don't have a lot of time to hear everything. A lot of things you think might be relevant aren't relevant in the law. They have very little time to hear the information to decide your case. They must act within the confines of the law, and they can't prioritize what's most important to you. And they're never going to issue emotional justice. You know, so if you're going to court for a declaration that you've been right and your evil scoundrel, soon-to-be ex, is wrong, you know, it's a foolish choice.
Right. Right. You say in the book, one of the most cowardly things people do is stay in an unhappy marriage and refuse to make a move until they find somebody else to take the place of the spouse. An affair is a lousy substitute for courage. But there are many people who want that new car in the garage before they move out, right?
Right, right. Well, you know, and it's tough. It makes the divorce process so much more difficult. And I think, you know, overall, the reason I want people to hear these strategies and learn these strategies is because we can look at divorce a different way, and we can be adult about it, and we don't have to, as a society, have this view of divorce as the worst thing that will happen in your life. And I think that's, you know, there's still that stigma associated with getting divorced. But when you go out and you cheat, you've just made everybody's life more miserable. Man up or woman up and say, you know what, we need to end the marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You say develop a solid game plan before we start getting involved in all of this. So what are a couple of the things people should do up front when they know they're starting to head down that divorce track?
Right. So you should start to inventory your assets and debts and the financial pieces, because sometimes if you're the spouse especially who isn't familiar or hasn't been the one in charge of that, that's a really important place to start. You know, you should also get a good therapist or coach lined up, because as you go through this, you're going to want someone cheerleading you on to do the right thing. And, you know, start interviewing attorneys and find out what they need and get a sense of all the alternatives out there for ways to resolve your divorce. I talk in the book about collaborative divorce, which is a great new method of getting divorced. Mediations, arbitration, start to empower yourself with the knowledge you'll need to do this in a wise way.
Right. And I think, you know, what happens if one of you wants mediation and the other doesn't? You're not going to get mediation, right? So what are some of the strategies you might approach someone with to encourage them to go through mediation?
Right. Well, and, you know, good attorneys will mediate between themselves, even if it's not with a formal mediator. So one of the things I suggest, whether it's just you and your spouse or you each have an attorney, and just start a series of meetings. Think of them as board meetings. Think of your divorce as a business. Begin to meet all together. Start going through the things that have to be decided. Determine what additional information is needed. And, you know, that's a great way to resolve things without ever getting a formal mediator involved.
Right. You talk a lot about the book about developing strategy for, you know, various stages. And it is really about being strategic. It's almost like taking on a job, isn't it? A project we may not want, but it is almost, you have to take that approach to it.
You really do. You know, it's like when you start a business, you would have a business plan, you would have goals, and you would have a budget, and you wouldn't spend your money foolishly. Or like, you know, a professional athlete, who are you going to surround yourself with? How are you going to train for this? How are you going to mentally prepare for this? There really are strategies that people can learn and implement to get them to that great place of their life after divorce.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about next life planning, because that begins when? We don't want to wait until we're divorced to suddenly start doing our planning for that, do we?
Oh, no, that's a critical part of the divorce process, is planning for what you will do after. I mean, that's very important. Otherwise, at the end, you just, you know, it's like your head's coming out of the sand and you're starting all over. That's important. And the book has some great worksheets where you inventory, not just money issues, but you inventory what is the good you got from that marriage that you're going to carry forward with you into your next best life. What are the things you experienced during the marriage you never want to experience again, and you will never allow yourself to experience again? And then what are those things and those talents or those dreams that maybe got hidden, because if you were in a bad marriage, likely you weren't living your true, great, authentic self. What are those things that you can put back in your life?
Right. I love the you have in that Plan Your Next Life chapter, Grow Your Gains and Forget Your Losses segment there. You know, you can spend more time with people who feed your spirit. You can take more time to take care of yourself, exercise properly, eat healthy, sleep better, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of pluses.
there's a lot of pluses. I mean, I even say, you know what, maybe you like to slurp, you know, milk out of the carton in bed, so go for it.
So do you think, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I read that women typically, on studies, women typically are happier after the divorce, men are unhappier after the divorce. What's your feeling on that?
I don't know if that's true, but they probably haven't read The Wiser Divorce then, or they'd all be happier. You know what? I think that's probably because traditionally, you know, men have been out there and been primarily still the wage, the wage earners and the workers, and they've really probably lived more authentically through their careers. So maybe that's why. And, you know, women, when they get divorced, realize, wow, there's so much more I can do I wasn't doing. But
Interesting. So I love the you have a chapter called Attract Good Communication Karma, and you talk about smiling, smile, smile, smile.
Right. Well, you know, really, what you do physically with your body affects your brain chemicals.
Mm-hmm,
so,
definitely.
You know, that's why the book is not just about how to talk and how to behave, but it's about how to think, too. All of those things all together will change the way you walk through your divorce. And, you know, if you can't smile at a divorce, I don't know what you can smile at.
Right. So you said this comes out today on Amazon, correct?
Yes, it's available on Amazon, and you can also get it at my website, AngieHallier.com. That's H-A-L-L-I-E-R.
Great. And I just want to put this out there to listeners, because I see a lot of books come across my desk, and it seems like, you know, the Amazon situation for self-publishing has allowed anybody to write books, which is great on one hand. But on the other hand, you know, I've probably had a dozen or more books come across my desk on divorce by people who've gone through a divorce. Angie is an expert in handling this. And, you know, I think that's where we need to go when we're looking for this. We need to look for the expert who handles this day in, day out, knows the system. And I think you've got some really great advice in here, very good strategies.
Oh, thank you so much, Vicki. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
And a pleasure speaking with you. And again, the book is called The Wiser Divorce, Positive Strategies for Your Next Best Life, and that's by Angie Hallier, available on Amazon today. Well, I want to thank each of you for tuning in today. Keep your questions coming. You can find me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, or you can email me at info@conversationslive.net, and conversations is plural. You can also find us on Facebook, at Twitter, Facebook is Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Twitter is just Vicky St. Clair. And if you have comments or feedback, we would love to hear from you. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.